Welcome to tonight's program. Thanks for tuning in. My name is Mike Malloy. Glad you could make it. Coming up next half hour, something I want to share with you is very, 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 very important. It has to do with Vince Bugliosi's book, The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder. So after the break at the bottom of the hour, have a something to write with handy, if you would, because there's something I want to share with you about that book. All right. Let me see here. Oh, how about Levi Johnson, the former soon-to-be son-in-law of Sarah Palin, the father of her grandchild? He was on the early show, CBS's program this morning, and he had some very interesting things to say. I don't know whether to take this guy seriously. No, obviously he's an Alaska hillbilly. I understand that. And, you know, not the brightest bulb in the marquee, which to me kind of lends a lot of credence to some of the charges he's hinting about where it concerns the former governor of Alaska. Among the things he said that Palin, and I'm not surprised about this, Palin's a phony like all Republicans. All Republicans are phony. The ones who are office holders are the worst, but, it's rank and file Republicans. They're all phonies. They scream about they want a balanced budget, and yet they support war that is financed through borrowing money from China. I mean, that's just one example. They're phonies, they're cowards, they're duplicitous, they're sneaky. And that's just the rank and file. That's just somebody who votes Republican, all right? The office holders are real swine. But he gives an example, and, you know, believe it or don't believe it, I choose to believe it. He gives an example of Sarah Palin's horrendous Christian hypocrisy. And when he says that she repeatedly referred to her son Trigg, the one that was born with Down syndrome, as her retarded baby, among the family, her retarded baby. He said that today on CBS's early show. CBS's Maggie Gonzalez was questioning him. She said, you know, why should we believe you? Why does it sound like you're dead set on hurting these people? Yada, yada, yada. Levi Johnson explained that he was hurt by the Palins shutting him out of his own son's life. And though he, quote, isn't into hurting people, end quote, he feels justified in his media offensive, both in Vanity Fair and now in this interview on CBS. He also said he's still holding back what he refers to as some huge, his word, huge things about the former Alaska governor. And when questioned by Maggie Gonzalez, of course, Levi Johnson got very coy and wasn't about to say what these huge things were. The CBS reporter, said, well, are they illegal or just immoral or what? And, of course, Levi just put a big dung-eating grin on his face and said, I'm not going to tell. I probably will never tell. I don't know. Maybe not. Huh? Make me tell. I'm not going to tell. You know, that kind of craziness. So we shall see. I'm sure there will be more of this. I'm sure there will be much, much, much more of this freakish woman and her soap opera story from Alaska. It's my understanding that she's due to make a speech in Iowa when next week, or sometime soon. Iowa being, of course, the launching pad for presidential campaigns, unless you're Ronald Reagan, the once and now dead Ronald Reagan, who launched his presidential candidacy in Philadelphia, Mississippi, where three civil rights workers had been murdered by members of the Klan, who were also law enforcement people, too. So, anyway, Levi Johnson says he's holding back huge things about Sarah Palin. Oh, my God. From our psychopathic Christian file tonight, the story out of Texas. A Texas middle school teacher was luring, according to the police, luring teenage girls into having sex with him. He came up with a fictional, what he called, secret society to these girls, according to the arrest warrant. The guy's 37. He was arrested Monday by San Antonio police, charged with aggravated sexual assault of a child. He was a teacher at the Christian Academy of San Antonio, Texas, and he taught science, keyboarding, and the Bible. What could that be? Anyway, that was what he taught. He was the director. He picked the term. I'm the director of a secret society known as the Order. Christ. That encompassed elements of Freemasonry, witchcraft, not Wicca, but witchcraft, and Christianity, but which really, according to the warrant and the police in San Antonio, really was a vehicle for underage sex. Now, the cops began investigating this freak after a teenage girl told him that two members of Russo's society tried to recruit her into the group, which would have required her to, quote, be intimate with the director to establish trust. God. The victims are telling the cops that Russo quoted Bible passages to, quote, legitimize his believed ability to engage in sexual intercourse with minors. The Bible said it was okay. And he claimed that the rules in his little society authorized such illicit activity. He is in jail in lieu of $100,000 bail. Oh, and he was fired from his teaching position. Man, that's almost as bad as these Catholic priests that go around buggering children. Huh? What, you know, and again, I'm not going to say it. I almost said, and you people wonder why I hate religion, but I'm not going to say it. Terrible, terrible case in Oakland, California. 15-year-old girl, I'm sure you've heard about it now. This child was gang raped, beaten, robbed over the weekend. Five suspects have so far been arrested, and the authorities in Oakland are continuing to investigate the incident, which happened outside a homecoming dance at Richmond High School in Oakland. Police said there may be as many as 10 separate assailants, and as many as 20 people witnessed this horror and even joined in on the assault. This leaves the cops at a loss, they say, to explain why the crime went on for so long without being reported. They're probably Glenn Beck listeners. I wouldn't be surprised. Being blamed, at least in part, is the bystander effect, also called the Genovese syndrome. I'm sure you're familiar with that. Well, maybe you're not. It was the Kitty Genovese case in Queens, New York, a long time ago. I remember it was right around the time, it was shortly after John Kennedy had been assassinated. And in this case, this Kitty Genovese was 28 years old. She was robbed, beaten, raped, and stabbed to death while, she screamed in the street. People in nearby apartments raised their windows and looked out and watched. The New York Times reported that, 12, 15, 20, nobody was ever sure how many people witnessed it. Nobody called the police. Nobody did anything. And it was a horrifying event back in 1964, the spring, winter of 1964. It's horrifying. People couldn't believe it. I can remember. I remember this case. And I can remember thinking, how could somebody be that cold? Well, run the video ahead about 40 years, and here we are again. A 15-year-old girl who was beaten, raped, robbed, while people just stood there. I would imagine the people just standing there were Glenn Beck listeners. We'll be back after the break. I live upstairs from you. Yes, I think
He watches C-SPAN so you don't have to. It's More Mike Malloy.
I live upstairs from you. Yes, I think you've seen me.
I got a couple of emails here that said the streaming, internet streaming is not happening. Is it still not happening? We unplugged just for a minute there as we went into the break to reset the modem. So if... let's see, your stream plays Christmas-esque music. We're playing Christmas music. I had to switch over to KTLK's stream. All right, well, if you're getting us on the MikeMalloy.com stream, send me an email. What else we got here? A couple of emails. A couple of people asked me to mention what is coming up where it concerns two important votes next Tuesday. And here's what they are. This is from Gordon in Oklahoma. It says the listeners in the state of Washington can help. Can help bring about equality by supporting a yes vote on what is referred to in Washington State as Referendum 71. A yes vote on Referendum 71 will preserve the domestic partnership law passed by the Washington State Legislature and signed into law by the governor. In addition to extending the right to register as domestic partners to same-sex couples, the law also extends the right to opposite-sex couples over the age of 62. Now, think about that for a second. You know, a lot of older folks who may not be inclined to marry, but out of financial need to live together and qualify as domestic partners. Anyway, Gordon writes, the radical right and some of the looniest ministers you can ever imagine are behind the movement to overturn domestic partnerships in Washington State. It's down to the wire on this in a matter of which side gets out the vote. If you do a Google search for Washington families standing together, that'll help you get in contact with the campaign. Washington families standing together. All right? That's in Washington State. Gordon adds, in Maine, the vote seems like a double negative. A no vote will preserve the law passed by Maine's legislature and signed by the governor. A yes vote will, in effect, veto the law extending the right to marry to lesbian and gay couples. Now, this campaign is getting very hot, and money is pouring in from the usual wingnuts, the fundamentalist zealots, front groups for the Mormons and the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church in Maine even managed to find a healthy amount of cash in their so-called rainy day fund to make a substantial last-minute contribution. Rainy day fund? I thought all that money had been spent settling lawsuits for perverted priests attacking children. No, I guess there's still a little left over, huh? Also, Gordon writes, a Google search for Protect Maine Equality should help locate the campaign. So in Washington, if you live in Washington, the Google target should be Washington families standing together. If you live in Maine, search for Protect Maine Equality. If directed to a site that says no on one, Protect Maine Equality, that's the correct site. That's where the no might trip you up. Anyway, there's that. And then who else wrote? Tony also wrote, the gay marriage question in Maine is polling favorable towards the no on one side. That's the good side. It's a slight lead, but nonetheless a lead. So I'm hoping that before Tuesday, November 3rd, You will lend your voice towards supporting us up here in Maine. Although you don't broadcast on any radio stations here, you do have a following thanks to satellite and internet broadcasts. And I think it would be great if you talked more about the smear campaign being waged by the religious nutcases to get people to vote yes, which would end these rights, these human rights. And although we are not getting the attention like California did last year, it could still be a glimmer of hope for gay rights advocates if the people of Maine reject the hate speech of the Christian right and voted to allow marriage rights for all Mainers. Is that how you say it? Mainers? All Mainers? All residents of Maine. Tony lives there, so. What a shame, isn't it, that we have to try to rally people to support just basic human rights, and that powerful, monumental, incredibly wealthy, child molesting religious organizations can work against those human rights. I don't know, man. I'm just trying to figure out when we all fell through the looking glass.
I want to live in a country that's safe, in a land that's clean and free, for every color and culture, every person, every being.
Truth seekers, gather round the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. You got something to write with? I hope so. Before I do that, though, I got an email here from Zeke. The assault on this 15-year-old child happened at Richmond High in Richmond, California, not Oakland, as I said. I guess Richmond is, what, another suburb of... San Francisco? I don't know. I apologize. Anyway, as Zeke points out, Richmond is the home of Chevron and therefore a terribly blighted city. We have enough problems in Oakland, but the sad thing is this could happen anywhere because human nature stinks. Okay. You remember when Vince Bugliosi published the book... or had published the book, The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder. It was a New York Times hardcover bestseller. And I don't know how many people read it, but I know that one of our ethics advisors to this program, Bob Alexander, who most of you know of, started a website, started an effort, collected enough money to send out over 2,000 copies of the book, cut a deal with the publisher. And they went to all the various prosecutors around the country whose jurisdictions included those where an American man or woman had been sent to war and died. And since George W. Bush and his entire crew lied about this, it's a prosecutable crime, murder. Vince Bugliosi has an incredible record as a prosecutor. I would hate to ever have been, gotten to know from somebody. You're about to be prosecuted by Vince Bugliosi for anything. I don't care. He's a hard ass prosecutor, and as you know, he's the one that prosecuted the Manson family and so on and so on and so on. So. Bob Alexander sent these books out to all these various prosecutors around the country with a cover letter that said, you know, if you read this book, you will have the blueprint for indicting this war criminal for murder. I'm paraphrasing, of course. No responses. Nothing. Zip. All the effort that Bob and friends of his put in to get these things cross-referenced and mailed out, all the effort that contributors sent money, I think it was, I don't know, around 10 grand altogether, it may have been higher, I don't know. But in these times, that was a lot of money that people contributed to get these books out. And Bob provided all the labor and his friends. So Bob told me he got one response from a county attorney, I believe it was a county attorney, prosecutor, who said, oh, maybe next year. That's it. All right. Bugliosi and GWB LLC, that's kind of interesting. It's a company. They have put together a production company to produce a documentary of this book. Yeah, it's going to be a movie. The film is directed by David Burke, produced by Kip and Kern Kohnweiser, and executive producer Peter Miller. It's scheduled for release in February 2010, next February. And there is a 9-minute extended trailer of this movie available to you now online. The film is not only about the monumental crime committed by Bush and members of his administration, the press release says, in taking America to war in Iraq under false pretenses. It is equally about deterring future presidents and their administrations from knowingly going to war on a lie, because a Bush prosecution will tell them that the law will be enforced and there will be legal consequences. No one is above the law. Now, I want you to, I'm going to give you the website in a second, or the web address, and look at it. Watch it. I watched it earlier this evening. And the company that's doing this, you know, they're trying to raise money to market and distribute the movie. This is, the, you know, they're not pitching you for money when you go to the website. You know, they're going to people who have lots of money. You know, they're going to the wealthy liberals, the kinds of people that Air America, before it was taken over by criminals, appealed to, that every liberal organization in the past 20, 30 years has appealed to and gotten the door slammed in our faces. I can't tell you how when the Drobnys and I were trying to do Nova M, how many wealthy liberals we appealed to for help and how many times we were just told, well, you know, I got other things to do. Okay, you know, whatever. So it seems that the liberal left doesn't have $100 million a year to pump into projects like this. The conservative wealthy, they've got 10 times that. But for some reason, wealthy liberals present themselves as, I don't have it. I don't have anything. All right, you ready? I want you to look at this. You can do it now, do it later. It's up to you. The web address is Indie, I-N-D-I-E, Go-Go, Indiegogo, I-N-D-I-E-G-O-G-O, Indiegogo.com/Bush. Okay? Again, it's I-N-D-I-E, Indiegogo.com/Bush. And I've got it up at my, do we have it up yet, Kathy? Did you put it up? Now, if you don't want to deal with typing in yourself, just go to MikeMalloy.com. It's on the front page. But, excuse me, what I'm suggesting is that you look at this and spread the word. Make this 9-minute trailer go viral. Come on. Now, here's another one of those things we can all do by not even getting off our asses. And most of us, at least around my age group, we like that. You know? You mean I don't have to carry a sign? Right, you don't. All you have to do is go look at this 9-minute trailer. That's one hell of a trailer, isn't it? Look at it. Actually, it's closer to 10 minutes, I think. Look at it and then send it on. Send it on. Send the link on to people on your email list, people you think might want to see this. And let's get this thing out there. Come on. Come on, we can do it. Especially, you know, all the people who contributed money when Bob Alexander was trying to get these books mailed out. You know, and I think most everybody got some kind of a response from him about that. And, you know, we did our part on that. You did your part. I did mine. Bob did his. Bugliosi did his. The prosecutors more or less gave the United States the finger. They don't care. They just don't care. You know, this could be, not only could the case have made them, taken them into the history books, but it would have brought justice where justice is sorely needed. We had a criminal operation running this country for 8 years. We have 5,000 dead Americans and tens of thousands of dead other people because of this son of a bitch. And he's going to get away from it. He is out now giving speeches as a motivational speaker. For God's sake. Oh, don't scream. Come on. I don't know why I still get riled up. I really don't. It's absolutely pointless. Because people who listen to this program are already there, you know. They're already there. You know what the problem is. And the right-wingers who listen to this usually listen for about 30 seconds, then bail out because I scare the Christ out of them. Oh, not me personally, but the fact that they can't handle the truth. And because they're sneaky liars, they run and hide. Oh, turn off the radio. Hurry, Maude, turn it off. Jesus Christ, who's that boy cursing on the radio? Get that son of a bitch off. You know, that kind of stuff. Indiegogo.com/Bush. IndieGogo.com/Bush. And after you've looked at it, will you do old Uncle Mike a favor and just forward the link? Send it to people. Send it out there. You know, this is like the protest tomorrow, the nationwide protest that I think has 46 people signed up now, to do nothing. You know, we don't have to do anything. I'm not going to do anything. Tomorrow night's program, The Mike Malloy Show, will be a show from when? Back in September? Yeah, it's a rebroadcast because I am going to do my little 25 cents worth. That's all it is. Just a quarter. You know, that's what it costs me to subscribe to the podcast downloads. You know, it's a quarter. So I'm going to do my 25 cents worth. I am not going to do a live. I'm not going to work tomorrow. I'm going to withdraw and say for just 3 goddamn hours, I'm not going to participate. What are you going to do? So, here's something else you can do that doesn't require the expenditure of any energy. And I'm not being a smartass when I tell you that because, you know, I'm to the point where I don't have any energy left either. I really don't. So I'm not, you know, I'm not trying to shame you into doing anything. Oh, hell no. You know, we've done that. Christ, you and I spent what? Year after year after year. I can go back to my late 20s. When I started this. So no, I'm not trying to guilt trip you. I'm just saying this is something that we can do without getting out of our chairs. Go look at this trailer. All right. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
C-SPAN so you don't have to. It's More Mike Malloy.
It is 10 before the hour. You know how Lieberman is acting like, you know, just a total ass. You know, Joe Lieberman is being Joe Lieberman. And you know, his so-called independent status as a member of the Senate, and I don't know, Hadassah, I don't know what to do with this. He's going to be the silent fart at the party where everybody goes, "Ooh, God, what? and try to assist in filibustering against something that the majority of the American people want, and certainly the majority of the Senate wants. So that's Joe Lieberman. But 3 years ago, in July and September of 2006, I want you to hear what he was saying then. Now he's saying, I'm not going to do this. This is back when he was running for re-election before the Democrats in Connecticut told him to take a hike.
Connecticut, I can do more for you and your families to get something done to make health care affordable, to get universal health insurance. I've been working on health insurance reform for more than a dozen years. I have offered a comprehensive program, small business health insurance reform, something I call Medikids, to cover all the children in America on a sliding fee basis up to the age of 25. MediChoice to allow anybody in our country to buy into a national health insurance pool like the health insurance that we federal employees and members of Congress have. Medical malpractice reform. It will cover 95% of those who are not covered now, and it will reduce the pressure on rising costs for all the millions of others who are covered.
Well, by God, Joe, that's just wonderful. How are you, how you doing today, schmuck? Huh? How you doing today, you turncoat coward?
Is that a flip-flop?
Good Lord. Now, in a minute, we're going to play for you what he's saying now. And, of course, you already know what he's saying now. We'll probably play it for you when we come back from the break at the top of the hour. But isn't that amazing? I want to play that one more time. Have you got that queued up? Can you do that one more time? This is Joe Lieberman back in July, the first couple of sentences, and then from that point on in September, 3 years ago.
And what I'm saying to the people of Connecticut, I can do more for you and your families to get something done to make health care affordable, to get universal health insurance.
Oh, really?
I've been working on health insurance reform for more than a dozen years. I have offered a comprehensive program, small business health insurance reform, something I call Medikids, to cover
Medikids.
All the children in America on a sliding fee basis up to the age of 25.
Yeah.
MediChoice to allow anybody in our country to buy into a national health insurance pool like the health insurance that we federal employees and members of Congress have. Medical malpractice reform. It will cover 95% of those who are not covered now, and it will reduce the pressure on rising costs for all the millions of others who are covered.
MediChoice? Kind of like what? Medicare? MediInsurance? Meda? That's a good prefix, isn't it? Well, that was then. This is now. Joe, being the sour little prune that he really is, got his bloomers in a wad, apparently, when the people of Connecticut kicked him to the curb because he was just useless. That speech came when he knew he was about to be kicked to the curb, and I don't think it was very sincere. Joe Lieberman is a Republican. He's always been a Republican, and Republicans are liars, they're deceiving, they're sneaks. And Joe Lieberman is no exception. But when he thought he was going to be defeated, and he was defeated by a complete unknown, he had his ass kicked out of the Senate in the primary. And then he decided to run as an independent after talking with the Republican power structure, because a Republican senator from Connecticut has as much chance as an ice cube in hell. But the Republicans knew they could count on old Joe to come through if ever anything really big came up that would make the Democratic Party a lock as a majority of party for the next couple of decades. Well, this is that event, reforming health insurance. Of course, if Obama would have come out with single payer, it would have enshrined his name in history forever until the United States totally explodes or implodes. If the Democratic controlled Congress had come up with just pure public option, that would have guaranteed a almost permanent Democratic majority in the House and the Senate, although not permanent, because this country is filled with crazy people who like to vote against their own best interests. But it would have given, you know, as far as the eye can see into the future, a Democratic majority. So things could have gotten done. The Republican Party could have been sent to the basement where it belongs, where it could eat spiders and play with dead cockroaches. But Joe Lieberman is going to put a stop to that. You see, Lieberman single-handedly is going to do, finally, he has a chance to do what the deal was when he ran as an independent. When the Republican machine in Connecticut said, well, Joe, there's not too much we can do. Oh, wait a minute. Run as an independent. We'll turn out the faithful. We'll get your ass in there. We will. But if the time ever comes when we need you, we'll pull on your chain and you goddamn better bark. Do you hear?
Yeah, well, let me call Hadassah. I gotta check. That sounds like a deal. That sounds like a good deal. All right.
Welcome back. 7 past the hour. Do you have the, Kathy, do you have that second soundbite of Lieberman? All right, we played for you just a moment ago. Joe Lieberman, back in July and September of 2006, where he was trying to get reelected, and was all in support of universal health care, right? Oh, yeah, man. Meta-kids, meta-choice, all kinds of things he was going to do for the American public. Universe, 99.9% or 96.12 or 90.90 of all Americans on the Lieberman plan would have health insurance. That was then. I'll tell you what, it's only that first cut. Do you have that first cut? It was only 56 seconds, I think. Why don't we play that one first? And then we'll play what he's doing now. Okay? You got it there? All right, this is Joe Lieberman, July and September 2006.
And what I'm saying to the people of Connecticut, I can do...
Well, I thought we had it. Okay, I guess we don't have it. We lost
do
it.
Do more for you and your families to get something done to make health care affordable, to get universal health insurance. I've been working on health insurance reform for more than a dozen years. I have offered a comprehensive program, small business health insurance reform, something I call Medi-Kids, to cover all the children in America on a sliding fee basis up to the age of 25. Meta-choice to allow anybody in our country to buy into a national health insurance pool like the health insurance that we federal employees and members of Congress have. Medical malpractice reform. It will cover 95% of those who are not covered now, and it will reduce the pressure on rising costs for all the millions of others who are covered.
Oh, really? Reduce the pressure and rising costs. Well, that was then. This is now.
It's just not worth the risk, and it's not necessary to reform health insurance, which we need to do. When people hear public option, I think they think it's for free. It's not for free. somebody's going to have to pay for it, and you can bet it's going to be the taxpayers and the people who pay health insurance premiums now.
How about the people who pick the public option, Joe? They have to pay for it. It's just available. This man turns my stomach. I, and we've talked before. The only reason Gore picked him was to satisfy the Israel lobby in this country. Lieberman was about as qualified to be vice president as your auntie's dog. But Lieberman, there we had Al Gore from Tennessee, and had to have somebody that AIPAC and the Israel lobby would bless, and that was Joe Lieberman. And if you doubt that, don't send me an email. I'm not the least bit interested. That's exactly why Lieberman was picked. Gore wanted Lieberman like he wanted a dose of the clap. He didn't want anything to do with Lieberman. I got to talk with Hadassah first. Hadassah! So there you go. Did you, over the break, did you go to... Indiegogo.com/Bush and take a look at that trailer. Wow. Email here from Justine. Mike, thanks for the ongoing heads up on the grassroots effort to promote workers' rights via taking tomorrow off in protest. I'm probably missing something, but I didn't see an official sign up on your website, and maybe others are finding or missing the same thing. Either way, I forwarded the information to friends, family members, and coworkers. I'm definitely powering down, not working, not shopping, etc. Perhaps lots more people than it appears are doing the same. I don't know that we have anything up on our website at all, do we? Do we have something on our website about this? Okay, we must have missed it, Justine. But it's not a great big blinking sign, no. I guess this is what it is. And Justine, this is not in reference to what you wrote. This is not in reference to what you wrote to me. This is just my general feeling. How did I find out about this? Somebody sent me an email. There were no big signs up for me either. Somebody sent me an email, and I saw this thing, and I thought, and it's what Bob Alexander and I had talked about many times, about just taking a day off. Just don't do anything. Just one damn day. Just don't do anything. I mean, if every person in America who worked, who was concerned about the country. I'm not talking about Republicans. They're not concerned about anything except how to screw their neighbor out of something. So I'm not, screw Republicans. To hell with them. They're a minority party. They don't matter. But if every thinking American, every concerned American, every Democrat, every progressive, every liberal, every person who wants to see this country save itself from the cliff over which we're definitely heading, all you have to do is nothing. just do nothing. Nothing. Just do nothing. And if people are interested about that, and obviously, no, I don't think anybody on the left is talking about this. I haven't heard anything. Have you heard anything? Have you seen anything on any of the liberal or left websites? I haven't seen anything. I haven't heard any of the, of course, I don't listen to liberal talk show hosts. I don't listen to talk radio, period. But I haven't heard a peep. Nothing. Nothing. Haven't heard anything. So I don't know if, I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. Yes, I do. I'll tell you what's going to happen tomorrow. Absolutely, unequivocally, nothing. And I don't mean that in the sense of what the strike is about. I mean that people are just going to go about their business. Nobody knows about this. Nobody cares about this. And I honestly believe if everybody did know about it, I mean if, if Brian Williams and Charlie Gibson and Wolf Blitzer all would have talked about this, people still wouldn't do anything. You know, Wolf Blitzer and Charlie Gibson and Brian Williams and Katie Couric, they don't, they've got, they're so far above the herd. That's you and me. We're the herd. They're so far above the herd with their millions and millions of dollars for sitting in front of a camera for 23 minutes a night and spewing deceptive misinformation. They're so far above us, they couldn't care less. Do you think one of these national news anchors would ever, under any circumstances, say anything that would even possibly rock their boat with their corporate masters? Of course not. Jesus. Take a day off, protest the way the country's going. Come on. Come on. And maybe they shouldn't. That's advocacy. They're supposed to be news reporters, right? Yes, indeed. But I'm so old, I can remember back in the day when every television station, at some point during the week or the month, would bring on camera the general manager, always a white guy, always in a coat and a tie, if not always, 90% of the time, gray-haired, always 10 pounds chunkier than he should be, look like a small town banker. There he would be, the television station's general manager with an editorial. Remember that? Isn't that quaint? Isn't that quaint? And then, of course, with the fairness doctrine, they had to provide equal airtime to someone with an opposing point of view sometime within the next week or whatever. But remember that? I remember that. You do. I see the hands back there. Let me see some hands. Anybody remember that? Ah! There you go. Okay. Isn't that quaint? Isn't that just horse and buggy? Huh? The general manager of a television station actually going to give a 2-minute editorial that stated categorically and with no doubt the position of the media mogul in your town, whether your town was 5 million or 5,000. And then, of course, they had to get somebody else on to give an opposing viewpoint. So, in these times, the chance of a Katie Couric or a Brian Williams or a Charlie Gibson mentioning the strike tomorrow are the same as plans to open a Dipper Dan franchise in hell. We'll be right back.
Conservatives, don't be afraid. Be very afraid. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. All right. Now, this is interesting, too. This is from Kay, our education correspondent. It's not one of her report cards, but she says, Mike, you've mentioned Germany on the program a couple of times this past week. First, how wealthy Germans signed a letter asking that their taxes be raised for the benefit of all Germans. And second, you read the piece by T.R. Reid on the myths about health care in other countries. Having lived in Germany, I can vouch for the fact that they have some ideas that seem odd to your average American. My friend Olaf describes the German social safety net this way, quote, the system is set up so that the strong pull the weak. We see it as an investment in our own quality of life, especially because we know that tomorrow we could get sick or injured and end up needing that help ourselves, end quote. A recent editorial, Kay writes, at the German news site Deutsche Welle, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, at least partially explains my friend's social democratic mentality. As you'll see, the leaders of the new conservative government coalition, which includes Chancellor Angela Merkel and Mr. Horst Seehofer, talk kind of funny compared to their compatriots on this side of the pond. Here's a quote from Deutsche Welle. Quote, the incoming CDU-FDP coalition government, that's the Christian Democratic Union and the Free Democrats, has simultaneously promised lower welfare contributions and social equality. The coalition partners, who cheerfully sat before the press on Saturday morning, carefully avoided any impression that their government would be one of social neglect. They believe in social justice, they said, and they want to remove all remaining social inequalities. These are the promises with which the CDU-FDP coalition has entered government. Now they must be measured on how they honor these promises, end quote. Kay writes, the Christian Democratic Union is Germany's center-right party, and the FDP, or Free Democrats, are generally viewed as the pro-business party. But wait a minute, pro-business, center-right, conservative? All three of those terms have been used to describe this new coalition, and yet, what are these party leaders thinking about? What are they talking about? Social equality. Social justice. WTF? Are such words spoken by those on the American right? By pro-business interests? Hell no. Their vocabulary is limited to phrases like, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, and not with my tax dollars. Whether the new German coalition will be able to deliver on its promise of tax relief with no decline in social benefits remains to be seen. However, the fact that a term like social justice is even part of its vocabulary is remarkable and goes a long way toward explaining the outlook of Germans like my friend Olaf. It also highlights the fundamental difference between conservatives in a social democracy like Germany and conservatives in a totalitarian democracy like our own. Kay. And Kay is obviously picking up on F. William Engdahl's term, totalitarian democracy, which is pretty much where we are now. Yeah, Angela Merkel is certainly not liberal. She is. She worked against. She's an East German, if that term is still operant. She comes from what was called East Germany. She, as often as she could, worked against the German Communist Party, the Communists of East Germany. It's a wonder that the German, East German, what was the secret police? It wasn't the Stasi, was it? No, that was somebody else. It's a wonder that they didn't kill her a long time ago. She's now the leader for a second term. And these are not liberals in the sense that you and I think of liberals. And they are damn sure not conservatives in the sense that you and I think of conservatives. But they believe in social democracy or democratic socialism or social justice or equal justice or however you want to say it. I like to say democratic socialism because it just sends little tremors of horror up and down the spines of these right-wing dullards that live in this country and hits their gag reflex. There's nothing like knowing that some freak listening to your program had to run to the bathroom and toss his cookies because he heard the term social democracy or democratic socialism. You know, you get your kicks where you can, right? Okay, I tell you what, we have a break at hand. We're going to open up the lines if you'd like to talk tonight. Get in here and join us. 877-996-2556 is the number. 877-996-2556. And I shall see you on the other side of this break.
ready for a liberal helping of truth? It's More Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. Before we get to your calls here, regarding that Vince Pugliosi movie that is coming out, it's due to come out in after the first of the year. Bob in Las Vegas, not Bob Alexander. Bob in Las Vegas writes, Mike, one question always asked of Democrats is why the Congress holds hearings to investigate, or why doesn't the Congress hold hearings to investigate the various crimes of the Bush administration, some of which actually call for the death penalty? Have you noticed you get the same answer almost word for word from everybody, from Bernie Sanders and Nancy Pelosi all the way to Obama himself? The answer is, we have so much on our plates, we were left such a mess, we have so many serious issues facing us, that we have to look ahead and not dwell on the past. Almost as if it was written for them by a lobbyist. So today I woke up and turned on the TV, and what did I see? A televised congressional hearing looking into injuries in the NFL. You betcha. During the time that our Congress was on that part of their plate, I wonder how many of our troops were killed in Afghanistan and Iraq. How many? Oh, well, you fill in the blanks and spell check. Mike, we have discussed this in the past. How do we hold these people in possibly the most corrupt Congress in our history accountable to the people? The solution is easier than anyone would think. Take the money out of politics by banning all political and advocacy ads from the all electronic media, or start taking out the politicians. It's that simple. I'll leave it at that. Take care and keep it lit. Bob in Las Vegas. Jesus, I hope you understand what he means about taking out the politicians, take them out of office. But the excuse that we've got too many things to do, these Democrats say we have too many things on our plate, we got to look forward, I don't want to look backwards. To me, that translates very quickly and very simply. I'm on the take. I'm trying to be a Democrat, not a Republican, but I am on the take. I have to be on the take if I want to be a member of Congress or in the executive branch. If I want to be president or a senator or a representative, I've got to be on the take. There's certain people I can't piss off. There's certain things I can't say. There's certain things I cannot do. I may be doing the best I can as a right-wing neo-Nazi, in other words, a Republican, or as a Republican light, as a Democrat. But I'm doing the best I can. I can't focus on impeachment. I can't focus on holding people responsible for the crimes. I've got to think about how to screw up health care to satisfy the corporate people who put me here. I've got to think about how to screw up a U.S. foreign policy to keep the war machines going. I've got to think about how to screw up everything I can get my hands on, because I wasn't sent here to solve things. Well, not for you anyway. I was sent here to facilitate the change in this country from a representative democracy, or as the right-wingers like to scream as they wet their pants, a democratic republic, the change from that to, well, you know, democratic totalitarianism, a democratic dictatorship, call it what you want, corporatism, fascism. All right. Nora is in Minneapolis listening on KTNF. Hi, Nora.
Oh, hi there, Mike. Oh, suddenly I'm on.
Yes, you are. You're on.
We do have that type of democratic corporatism here in Minneapolis. It's kind of scary.
Oh, yeah?
But that's not what I called to talk about.
All right.
I already told her what I was going to talk about, and this was it. The brokenness in the world that was created by this Nixon-Reagan agenda of anti-marijuana, it's manifesting itself in a brokenness that is in all the problems that we see. Afghanistan, it's now they grow poppy. You know, in 1980, the hashish was coming in with these gold stamps on it with hammer and sickle. And that was my first political awakening idea about what was going on in Afghanistan, about the Russian taking over and then the U.S. paying hundreds of millions of dollars to create the Taliban to fight against that.
Mm-hmm, right.
And also it manifests in the pharmaceutical and the medical problems that they're having. I don't know if you're aware, but GW Pharmaceutical has the drug that's in Canada and in Europe, and they've been waiting for 5 years to see what's going to happen in America. It's made out of marijuana plants, and it's, you spray it in your throat. It's called Sativex. And like 6 months ago, I saw Gordon Brown, when he talks about his problems to the minister or whatever on C-SPAN, and he's pounding his podium saying, we need more, better supplies of Sativex for our MS patients. It manifests itself in the why hemp is illegal to grow in America. They're making car bodies out of hemp, and they have to import it from other countries because it's illegal to grow in our country because it's on the controlled substances list, even though it doesn't have drugs in it, because it looks like marijuana. We're living under a Nixon-Reagan agenda every day. Nixon went to Nepal in 1973. He forced Nepal to make marijuana illegal. So therefore, the next year, they had a $5 million deficit caused by not receiving taxes from growing marijuana.
No, no, wait a second. I was with you clip to the part about Nixon going to Nepal.
It's a Nixon-Reagan agenda. I'm just saying
I really don't think, Nora, that President Richard Nixon went to the country of Nepal and told them to make marijuana legal. Or whatever, or illegal, or, you know, I just don't think that happened. I'm not denying what you're saying. I'm not trying to, you know, pick a fight with you, but I just don't, I do agree that, the insanity in this country about marijuana or its, innocent cousin hemp is just, insane. Hey, thanks, Nora. I appreciate you checking in. I really do. Mark is in Minneapolis too. Hey, Mark.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm all right.
You got me here?
Yes.
All right. Hey, listen, just a little off topic here, but I wanted to talk a little bit about the healthcare debate. I shouldn't call it a healthcare debate. I should call it a health insurance debate.
Right.
I've been amazed at, if we're talking about health costs and healthcare, and don't get me wrong, I'm in favor of a Medicare for all, Medicare and whatnot, but there is no discussion about stopping subsidies for corn, subsidies for sugar. The fact we got fast food restaurants in particular in the poor neighborhoods in this country, and just the foul poison that these corporations are able to inject in the bodies and the fact they peddle the stuff to children. I mean, Happy Meals have cartoon characters.
Yeah, I certainly completely agree with that. That should be part of any. If we ever get to the point of really talking about health care in this country, which we're not, we're talking about health insurance reform. But if we ever get to the point where we're seriously interested in the health of Americans, it's getting worse every year. A lot of people say, well, you know, damn, we all live to be 77. Yeah, we rank 14th or something. And in terms of infant mortality, way down below off the chart, all these degenerative diseases like diabetes and cancer and heart disease. You know, we have the highest rates, I think, of any Western or industrial country on the planet because of this. Yeah, you're right. I don't know when that discussion will ever come, though, Mark. I really don't.
Yeah, I mean, you can get what kind of country do we live in when you can get a cheeseburger for less than you can a batch of strawberries?
Right.
It is absolutely. And the fact, you remember the Camel cigarette cartoon, the Camel guy, the cartoon?
There were so many of them.
Yeah, the tobacco companies were required not to use that type of cartoon.
Oh, that Joe Camel guy. Yeah, okay.
Well, why the hell are fast food places allowed to have Wild McDonald's and furry, what's the milkshake guy at McDonald's?
I have no idea.
You know what I'm talking about? I do. I mean, they shouldn't be able to peddle that stuff
to
kids that don't know any better, and certainly a lot of their parents don't know any better either.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. Mark, I hope someday, somewhere, somehow in this country, we would have you know, leadership that would definitely point towards that. In the meantime, we just have to take care of ourselves around that issue. Thanks, Mark. I appreciate what you had to say. We had an interesting, I completely agree with Mark. We had an interesting situation with Molly the other day. We were coming back, I think it was Sunday, from up in the mountains, and I couldn't find, we were on a, you know, an expressway. And I couldn't find, a real coffee shop. And I've been hearing that McDonald's now has, you know, they have better than that piss water that they used to sell as coffee. So we waited until we saw a McDonald's sign at an exit. We pulled off and we pulled into McDonald's, and Molly just about had a freak out. She said, "What are we doing here?" I said, "Honey, we're not going to get food. We're just going to get coffee." She said, "You know, it will kill you." So we've done a pretty good job with Molly where it concerns fast food. We've told her that Ronald McDonald is an axe murderer, just like the, you know, well, we didn't say axe murderer. We said he's a terrible character like some of the goblins and bad people in your fairy tales. And bless her heart, she has internalized that. We'll be back. Before the hour, before we go back to your calls, just a little bit of humor. There must be something in the water in South Carolina. This is from the State, which is a McClatchy newspaper in South Carolina. And since it's a McClatchy newspaper, it forces the people of South Carolina to confront truth about certain things. It's not what one would think. You know, you think of Columbia, South Carolina, you think the newspaper there is probably just some right-wing rag, but it's not. The State is a good paper, and it's owned by McClatchy, and that's the reason it's a good paper. But Columbia's assistant city manager for public safety, kind of like a top cop, says the city of Columbia is not going to formally investigate an incident Monday involving the former state assistant attorney general, Roland Cumming. Cumming or Corning? I don't know. I think it's Roland Cumming, a Republican. Cumming, who's a former state legislator, left his job with the attorney general's office after he was pulled over Monday night on suspicion of illegal activity. When he was pulled over, Cumming identified himself as an employee with the attorney general's office and was not charged with a crime. The a spokesman for the city said after reviewing the incident with Police Chief Tandy Carter, quote, "There's no indication of any wrongdoing on the part of the officer involved in this." Officer Mike Wines, whose wife works in the attorney general's office, the officer stopped Mr. Cumming, or is it Corning? I guess it's Corning. Stopped Corning Monday after witnessing his car pull into a secluded spot in Elmwood Cemetery in downtown Columbia. Corning was in the car with an 18-year-old employee of the Platinum Plus Gentlemen's Club, Officer Wines reported. After receiving conflicting stories from Corning and the woman, the 18-year-old stripper, Officer Wines searched Corning's car and found some sex toys and sex enhancement drugs. Officer Wines said Corning told him he had a prescription for the drugs. He and the woman were later released. Now, the part of the story, I don't know what part of the story you find the most amusing, the most entertaining. Of course, this guy will turn out to be married, and then he'll go on television over in Columbia with his wife standing back in the shadows in her contempt and disgust of this pig that she's married to, and he will say, I've let my family down, but my church is praying for me, and, you know the rap. But I think the funny part, the really funny part to me is the, not funny, haha, but funny, odd. The odd part is that because he's a Republican, now he resigned, immediately resigned, but he, you know, he's not charged with anything. I guess there's nothing wrong with pulling into a cemetery in the middle of the night with somebody in the car with you and sex toys and sex drugs and yada yada. I guess there's nothing wrong with that at all. Just like for the governor. Aren't they beginning impeachment hearings against Governor Mark Sanford for doing essentially the same thing? Oh, Jesus, God. Stephen is in Burbank, California, listening on KTLK. Hey, Stephen.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I'm hearing words like, you know, democratic socialism and social democracy, and I'm hearing words like democracy and fascism and capitalism. And, you know, we could study people like Frank Luntz, and then we could study people like George Lykoff, you know. And,
right.
And they talk about framing the debate. And what we have happening is, for what we know now, is we have language. The language will convey reality and ideas. And then people will try and get us to change the way we perceive things through, you know, language. Like, they're trying to make us believe that entitlements are somehow a bad thing. You know, they'll try to make us believe somehow that taxes are a bad thing. They'll try to make us believe somehow that, you know, working for the betterment of society is a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
And if you study and you look, well, you know, you didn't even have to study. We know that man is evolved as a social animal who forms communities.
Right.
You know, and then we unless
it's a Republican. Republicans like
those guys.
They like to live. They like to live in boxes or dark rooms where there's spiders.
Oh, do I have one here now? I was talking to Dave Marsh about this last Sunday.
Oh yeah.
And he's standing there and he's going, "Oh yeah, Obama's a socialist," you know. And
the Dave Marsh, the guy that works for what, Al Jazeera now?
Dave Marsh, no, he's a talk show host on Sirius 146 Left.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you meant Dave Marsh, who used to work for Nightline.
No, I don't think he did. This Dave Marsh he's an author. He writes books.
Okay, gotcha. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to throw a curveball in your conversation. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. He picks on me worse than you do. So anyway, you know, I'm telling this guy, this clown, you know, he says, well, you say Obama's a socialist. When did he try to introduce a bill or talk to Congress about getting a guaranteed annual wage, you know, income for a decent standard of living? Homina, you know?
Sure.
And so I'm looking at this stuff, and I'm thinking and saying, like, well, you know, you're saying socialism. What are you talking about? You're talking about reactionary socialism and its subheadings of feudal socialism, petty bourgeois socialism, German free socialism, conservative.
Yeah,
utopian.
I hear you. And guess what? I've got a break here, Stephen. Listen, thanks, man. I do appreciate you checking in. Take care. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It is about 7 past the hour on the Malloy program. From the Wall Street Journal online, it says House Democrats preparing to unveil legislation to overhaul the health care system signaled Wednesday, that would be today, that they would include a more conservative version of a government-run insurance plan that would negotiate payment rates with hospitals and doctors. The House reaches a compromise on a government-run health plan, but will the latest version of the public option plan make it through the Senate? Anyway, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said for weeks that the House bill would include a government-administered public option to compete with private insurers. We liberals want those payments to be tied to Medicare rates because that will keep costs down. However, the Blue Dog Democrats, the Democrats who don't belong in the Democratic Party, say Medicare's payments are too low anyway, falling far short of the actual cost to hospitals and doctors of caring for patients. Really? I didn't know that. I thought the reason hospitals were in trouble, a lot of them, financial trouble, was because they must take patients in the emergency rooms, they must provide treatment, and then they are not compensated because the people who come in without insurance are, well, without insurance. Oh, well, my mistake. Democratic leaders have concluded that they don't have the 218 votes needed to pass a bill tied to Medicare rates. Representative George Miller, Democrat of California, chairman of the House Education Labor Committee, and an ally, Ms. Pelosi, said, quote, after a series of discussions over the last couple of days, we've come to realize it's very tough to get to that point, you know, where the public option would be tied to Medicare or Medicare similar setup. The House bill is likely to expand eligibility also for the Medicaid program to those with incomes up to 150% of the poverty level. That would keep costs down since it would be cheaper for the government to insure low-income families through Medicaid than to provide subsidies for purchasing private insurance. Right. See, that's what the Republicans want. It's not a plan to reform health care at all, but that's what they want. They want government subsidies, and they call it tax breaks to go into the pockets of the private insurers. The Democrats, on the other hand, say it would be cheaper to insure low-income families through Medicaid. And it just goes on and on. Again, I'm astonished by the degree to which this discussion this nonsense that has flown out of the mouths of the freaks at Fox News and into the ears of the freaks who vote Republican, and the so-called conservative Democrats. You know, we're talking about health insurance reform. We're talking about punishing an industry. That's not the primary goal, but the secondary or tertiary goal is to punish an industry that has brutalized and continues to brutalize every single person in America that has health insurance. I don't care how good your plan is. I don't care how well you think that the claims are paid. Seriously, when you got those EOBs, explanation of benefits, when you get those things in the mail that says, well, now, you know, either something's rejected or it was coded wrong or they're not paying what you thought they were going to. You know what I'm talking about. It's a filthy, disgusting industry. It really is. The health insurance industry, they're vampiric. They're ghoulish. They're sons of bitches. Their job is not to provide health insurance. Their job is to deny payments to the providers after you have paid your premiums. That's what they are designed to do. One division. The other division of the health insurance industry is designed to deliberately, consciously defraud the federal government where it concerns Medicare payments That is their primary goal, to cheat, to lie, to steal, and to make their CEOs and their boards of directors wealthy. So, you know, we get to a point where there's serious discussion about a public option, which is, you know, single-payer light, I guess. I don't know. It's not what we should have as a civilized... Okay, yeah, you're right. We're not civilized. As an industrial country, that's not what we should have. We should have single-payer, not public option. Okay, let's do some phone calls, too. Lynette is in Minneapolis, listening on KTNF. Hey, Lynette.
Yes, another Minneapolis person calling you tonight.
Yes.
It's so great to talk to you, and I so agree with when you start talking about the mindset of the Republican these days, and I have people in my family that like this. They don't talk to me, so I don't, but I'm assuming they're still like this. But I called to voice my opinion on when you are mentioning, you know, democratic socialism, and then you say, gosh, you know, I can just imagine, you know, the horror that's going on in these people's minds. And a lot of these people are, that I've experienced, are usually right-wing Christian, and they think they're going to heaven. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, you know, what kind of heaven are they going to go to? Because, I mean, I don't know, when Jesus was talking about heaven, it seemed like kind of a socialism kind of a system. So what heaven are they going to?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I have problems with the whole concept, you know me, but... having been brought up, in the Christian faith, I have a pretty clear understanding of how, heaven is presented. And first of all, it's a dictatorship. The dictator is the Christian God. And then, of course, you have the enforcers. Those, I guess, would be the angels. And somewhere up there is, the Son of God, no daughter of God, no cousin of God, just the Son. I don't know, the people who go to this Christian heaven, I'm not sure exactly what their concept is. Being brought up Baptist and Methodist, I know that it never seemed to me to be a very pleasant place. What it was, and I got this from the Baptist faith and Methodist faith, it was a refuge from death. That's all. It was to allay my fears that when I die, that I will not, in fact, cease to exist. That I will, in fact, have some post-death, existence in a place that they've identified as heaven. And, you know, I started focusing on that when I was a younger person. I thought, you know, this is pretty crazy. The whole structure, the whole thing, the whole idea is crazy. But aside from that, yeah, I don't know what they think they're going to go to either. If they're going into a dictatorial system, if they find out that God is female and a woman of color, they're going to just, I don't know, can you die of shock when you get to heaven? I guess you can't die again. You can be born again, but I guess you can't, according to them, but you can't die again. I don't know. Or maybe they'll say, oh my God, she's colored! And they'll all head for hell. I don't know. But
do you think that they should change their from Christianity to dominionism? Because it's really not about Christ at all.
No, it isn't. And you're right. It is about dominionism. I think whatever honesty existed in the Christian faith, and that would be, you know, the three or four sermons that Jesus gave, and on that, they built this insane, of stuff. I think that's long gone. It's long gone. So.
I also think that the Republicans are really mad at anyone who's evolved past a fetus. I think that's a big part of it too. I mean, it's just this fetus love. And maybe for some people that's the best that they ever had.
I think you're probably right. Lynette, got a boogie. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
Thanks for checking in. I appreciate it. We'll be back momentarily. We have some news from AFPAC. Do you know what AFPAC is?
They sentenced me to 20 years of boredom. time to change the system from within. I'm coming now. I'm
time to practice your synchronized screaming. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Email here. It's from Rebecca, who writes, Mike, just got home from work and finally got to watch the trailer you recommended about the Bugliosi movie. And while I did not learn anything new, I am once again infuriated at this criminal, Bush, and his cronies, who must all be prosecuted lest future leaders abuse every law that makes us a country. I'd like to add that I just got home from work at 8 p.m. Pacific time because the infrastructure of the United States is a crumbling embarrassment. I live in San Francisco, and the Bay Bridge is quite literally falling down and currently closed. So this evening, my 8-mile commute from Emeryville to San Francisco took 3 hours. I guess I shouldn't complain because at least I have a job. I'm so glad to finally have a job after living unemployed and uninsured for the last 10 months. Thank goodness I finally got a job with insurance because I suffer from an incurable chronic disease called sarcoidosis that is attacking my lungs, eyes, skin, muscles, and bones. Normally, sarcoidosis is manageable, but without health insurance, I became incredibly ill over the past year, and last week I went into respiratory arrest and at the young age of 42, almost died. I just got out of the hospital last Friday. Why am I sharing this all with you? Because I'm a native of New York City that was living and working in a downtown Manhattan on 9/11. I and tens of thousands of other New Yorkers all suffer from this disease now, or worse, because the Bush crime family made the EPA lie about the air quality. That's one of the reasons I wish to see Mr. Bush in prison. The other reason is my best friend. Her son was killed in Iraq. Her son was killed by George W. Bush. For the kicker, that sergeant, her son, that sergeant's mother and sister are lesbians, just like myself. His mother is in a decades-old committed relationship, a relationship that has lasted longer than my heterosexual parents' marriage. But during the Bush-Cheney plague, all the nut jobs felt empowered to take our rights away. I understand your anger and share it. I hope I'm wrong and things can return to some degree of sanity in this country, but with each passing day, I feel less and less hopeful. And I'm seriously considering moving to Europe, to the home country of my girlfriend, so we can enjoy life in the 21st century, where we can live and marry and have health care and other things that are desperately denied the American people, or deliberately denied the American people. Keep up the fight. Rebecca. In Pakistan, which all of a sudden, have you noticed how all of a sudden Pakistan, notice all the talk about Pakistan? AFPAC is the new word, the new shorthand in media, AFPAC, Afghanistan, Pakistan. All of a sudden, Pakistan, we're apparently at war in Pakistan. Now, we know for a fact that Blackwater has been in Pakistan for some time, committing murder and kidnappings and torturings and so on and so forth. And I'll have a report on that here in just a second. But the, come on, Mike. Hillary Clinton, I was trying to say the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, is there. And, to greet her, a car bomb ripped through a crowd, a market in Peshawar, Pakistani city, killing 90 people, most of whom were women and children. That was just hours after Clinton arrived, talking about a fresh start in our relationship with the Pakistan government. As reported by the, I don't know who reported it. Is it the New York Times? Don't know. The bomb was the latest urban attack since the army launched a major assault on rural Taliban strongholds 2 weeks ago. It's Pakistan now. It was the deadliest since 2007, when about 140 people died at a procession to welcome home former Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto, who weeks later was herself assassinated. At first, nobody claimed responsibility. It's my understanding now that the Taliban militants in Pakistan have claimed responsibility for this. The slaughter just goes on. It just goes on. And now we are expanding the murder and mayhem, and we're doing it. Our presence there is doing it into Pakistan. I've said this before. I just wonder how much death can our country, the United States of America, be responsible for? And we've really built up a blood debt in the past 30 years. How much can we be responsible for the slaughter of innocent people? And we've killed millions. Do you understand that? I know you don't think about that during the day. I try not to think about it either, although it's starting to leak through during the day, which is, you know, just freaking me out. I'm not sure how to handle that yet. But are you aware of how many millions of people that we have killed for corporate America in the past 40 years? 5 million? 8 million? Think about that. We have killed as many as the Nazis killed in the Holocaust. We have killed in the past 40 years. Innocent. I'm not talking about soldiers. I'm talking about innocent civilians.
Is the voice inside your head. It's Mike Malloy.
Nothing lasts forever but the earth and sky. It slips.
26 before the hour. So Hillary Clinton arrives in Pakistan and in Islamabad. And she's trying to get the Pakistanis to take our war against the Taliban a little bit more seriously. So on her first day of this three-day mission to Pakistan, Secretary Clinton said that the way the Wall Street Journal says it, Washington will. Now, we will, you and I will contribute and disperse $125 million to the Pakistan government for the upgrading of key power stations and transmission lines. Meanwhile, the bridge between Oakland and, San Francisco? San Francisco Bay Bridge is falling apart. But we're going to send $125 million to Pakistan, Secretary Clinton says, to upgrade their power stations and transmission lines. What about ours? U.S. experts are also beginning to work with Pakistan utility companies to reduce power outages and lost revenue caused by outmoded technologies, which cost Pakistan hundreds of millions of dollars each year. U.S. experts. Now, who do you suppose they are? Do you suppose they're college professors, or do you suppose they're the Army Corps of Engineers, or do you think that maybe, perhaps, possibly, they're corporations who are over there with their mouths open and their hands out to get this money that is going to Pakistan? Sure. Mrs. Clinton said at an Islamabad press conference, quote, these projects will repair and upgrade key power stations across Pakistan that currently operate significantly below full capacity, end quote. Okay. Mm-hmm. Is this part of President Obama's stimulus plan, or is this come out of some secret fund? Now, according to U.S. officials or a U.S. official working on the power program, the reason we're doing it is because, quote, if we don't, the Taliban can feed off the blackouts and claim the government isn't delivering services, end quote. What? What? The Taliban doesn't want electricity. Jesus Christ Almighty, they don't want electricity. The Taliban wants to remain where their religion tells them to remain in the 14th century. If that's not a little bit advanced. Electricity, my ass. They want to continue to burn goat dung in their houses or whatever the hell, stucco or hovels or caves. I don't know. Oh, you're being a cultural imperialist right now, Malay. No, I'm not. I am sick to goddamn death of sending people, our people, over to die for folks like, I don't know, the Pakistanis, the Iraq, to hell with it. We're the ones that are destabilizing them to begin with. We're the ones that caused the problems to begin with. First we send in a couple of assassination teams or Blackwater or Navy SEALs to disrupt, to paint targets so that drones can come over and blow things all to hell. We destabilize the country. We do what the Soviet Union used to do. We just destabilize the Jesus out of the country and then say, oh, okay, well, now we have to go over there and rescue everybody. Oh, crud. Oh, man. The office of Richard Holbrooke, Obama's special representative to AFPAC. Apparently, Holbrooke has cobbled together energy experts in a bid to attract international investment. That's according to U.S. officials. Mrs. Clinton named a special envoy on energy security issues, someone named David Goldwyn. It goes on. It's astonishing. We can't get single-payer health care in the United States or even a so-called public option because the congressional slaves of the health industrial complex, like Lieberman, they say it may add to the U.S. deficit. And Citizens for Legitimate Government today, they had on one of their blogs, where are the calls for endless CBO studies on the billions wasted funding contractors and mercenaries and terrorists benefiting from Obush's wars? Bay Bridge closed after repairs fall apart. But we're going to go send money, $125 million, to Pakistan to build up their electric grid so the Taliban can't say, see, they can't give you lights. Too bad the bridge isn't in Pakistan, right? Now, in addition to all that, the U.S. military is looking for $1.3 billion for construction projects in Afghanistan. How about that? Also, Citizens for Legitimate Government. While the Obama administration weighs whether to send additional troops to Afghanistan, the U.S. military is spending billions of dollars on construction projects to ensure that country's infrastructure can support American and coalition personnel in 2010 and years beyond. The military has already spent roughly $2.7 billion on construction over the past three fiscal years in Afghanistan. Now, if its request is approved as part of the fiscal 2010 Defense Appropriations Bill, it would spend another $1.3 billion on more than 100 projects at 40 sites across the country, according to a Senate report on the legislation. So the corporate terrorists in this country are just, they're just making a fortune, aren't they, huh? Who do you, do you think Afghanistan engineering firms are going to handle that work? Afghanistan what, Mike? Do you think Pakistan engineering firms are going to handle the other business in that country? And then from India's online, sci-fi.com, not science fiction, but S-I-F-Y, sci-fi.com, Indian newspaper. A Pakistani journalist claims to have been receiving death threats from a U.S. agency for critically writing against the Obama administration and for reporting its secret operations in the country. Fears of being harassed has led him to use a pseudonym. He now fears for his life after breaking the story of the presence of Blackwater in Peshawar, along with CAII, that's the Creative Associates International, another warmongering private contractor. I wonder if the explosion in Peshawar today was detonated by Blackwater. I wouldn't be surprised. They slaughter Iraqis. Why not slaughter Pakistanis? It doesn't make any difference. A slaughter is a slaughter to these rat sons of bitches. The journalist had published the names of the heads of the agency, the operational heads of the agency, Blackwater, now Z, and had unmasked the nexus of Blackwater, FBI, and CIA. He also had investigated the activities of the U.S. consulate in Peshawar, including details of their activities, phone numbers, and the dozens of houses rented in lavish locations for the purpose of torturing, kidnapping, detention, and so on, according to The Nation, which is, I believe, that's an Indian. I don't think they're referring to The Nation magazine here. Now a report has revealed how he was hounded out of his home. He was later approached by the CIA. He also revealed that the agency tried to recruit him into spying on some imams of mosques through their man, Stephen Cash, who used to investigate Afghan refugees, and so on and so on. So this guy will probably be dead within the next 72 hours, this Pakistani journalist, and it will be, oh my goodness, he was killed in another one of those darned old suicide bombs, huh? And then from this, from Denny in Wenatchee, Washington, Denny writes, Mike, I'm 63 and haven't forgotten the Vietnam fiasco. That war ended only because of the war protesters and those of us who refused to go and slaughter innocent people who had done nothing to harm the U.S. The right-wing fanatics in this country have forced their fanatical rhetoric to be adopted as the norm in this current fiasco in the U.S. immoral Middle East occupation of Iraq and Afghanistan. It's ridiculous to thank a soldier for their service if you are against the senseless slaughter by our armed forces going on in those two countries as I am. When I meet a soldier, usually in an airport or anywhere else, I am polite and wish them a safe tour of duty, but I never thank them for killing innocent people in my name. And I wish everyone who is against these occupations would stop the fanatical thank you for your service to every soldier or veteran. My thanks go to those who refuse to serve and participate in the slaughter of innocent men, women, and children. Denny. Yeah, I know you're kind of torn with that. I know most people are. I've spent too much time lately in airports myself, and you know, you see these guys moving from point A to point B, and I always just feel a tremendous sense of sorrow. I wonder how many people they're going to leave behind when they're killed in the corporate madness, and if they're not killed, how they're going to return? Will they return minus an arm or a leg? Will they return suffering from psychological disorders for the rest of their lives? Thanks to our Motley Crue, Ben Burge, who handles streaming and podcast stuff. Yeah, we'll spank him later on tonight. I don't know what happened with the streaming there at the beginning of the program. Sharon Gordy, our military affairs correspondent. Bruce Enberg, economic affairs. Kate Petrini, education affairs. Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, ethics advisors. And Kathy Bay, the executive producer and program engineer. The situation in Afghanistan. I'm looking at something else here. Situation in Afghanistan is just, I don't know, AFPAC. We have a new word, AFPAC. A new place. It's called AFPAC. That's a very military term, isn't it? AFPAC. We are going to send troops to AFPAC. Have you been approached yet by anyone who has suggested you get into a pool, a monetary pool, money pool, betting pool, as to how many troops Barack Obama is going to order into this meat grinder that is AFPAC? Huh? Are you in a pool yet? 10,000, 15,000, 20, 25. The really disgusting thing is, no matter what the number is, if it's below 60,000, if it's below 60,000. Now, I realize that McChrystal deliberately made sure that the number 40,000 was leaked. 40,000 fresh, young bodies to go into McChrystal's war-loving game in Afghanistan. I realize that was the number he released, but... if it is anything below 60,000, the right-wing crazy people who work on radio and television in this country, who own radio and television in this country, will immediately begin attacking Obama. You know what happens if Obama sends 15,000 troops into McChrystal's meat machine? The crazy people that own radio and television will accuse him of everything short of treason. No, well, excuse me. They will accuse him of everything up to and including treason. There's only one way for Obama to satisfy the people he is apparently trying to satisfy, and that's not his base. That's not us. It's not the Democratic Party. Here's how you do it, Mr. President. I've already given you a solution how to get your ass off the hook, but apparently you're not going to take it. I know you haven't heard about it. But here's what to do. Instead of going on television and telling the American people that you're going to ask Congress to the Senate to issue a declaration of war and return that power as constitutionally mandated to the legislative branch, instead of doing that, here's what you do. Ask for primetime TV and go on the air and say two things. A couple of things, but two main things. The situation in AFPAC has gotten so bad, and that the enemy in AFPAC are determined to kill us all in this country. They're going to come up through the streets of San Antonio. No, that was the Contras. They're going to hit the beaches of San Diego. No, that was the North Vietnamese. They're going to bomb the coast. No, that was the Japanese. All right. The AFPACers are going to, I don't know. Never mind. They're going to get us. So it's become so bad in AFPAC, these Talibaners who are going to apparently get on their supersonic jets or launch their intercontinental ballistic missiles or send people over here with hydrogen bombs and stuff, that we have to stop them, Mr. Obama will say. So with that in mind, stopping the people in AFPAC that are hell-bent on destroying the great saint in America, we are going to commit a military force because we want to win this goddamn thing. It's not going to be Vietnam. We're going to commit a military force of 700,000 American troops. 700,000. We ain't screwing around. And we are tonight, Mr. Obama should say, putting on notice the AFPAC bad guys that we're coming. We are coming. God damn, are we coming? We are coming over there. We are going to stomp you into camel dung. We are coming over there with everything. We're coming over there with 5,000-pound bombs. We're coming with everything except nukes. And if you don't roll over and put your belly to the sunlight, we're going to bring nukes You sons of bitches, we're coming. 700,000 of us are coming. It's going to take a little while to train, but we're coming, man. We're coming with tanks, mortars, grenades. We're coming with every single weapon that our intense, beautiful, wonderful military-industrial complex can produce. That's A. Here's B. I am tonight ordering a reinstitution of the draft. Because we're going to whip these AFPAC terrorist asses. And I know, as I sit here in the Oval Office, I know that every single American wants to join in this fight. Every single American wants to make sure that these terrorist sons of bitches don't show up on the streets of San Antonio. No, that was the Contras. They don't show up on the beaches of San Diego. No. That was the Viet Cong. All right. That they don't show up. So starting next Monday, we're going to make this fair. We're going to have a draft. It's going to be a lottery. We're going to have 365 balls in there in the lottery thing. And we're going to take every number from 1 to 364. You people are going to join the Army. You're going to join the Marine Corps. You're going to join the Air Force and the Navy. We are going to beat these son of a bitches into camel dung. Do you understand? Let's go, America! God damn it! We've had enough of this. 700,000 troops are coming. Do you hear me, AFPAC? We're coming! 30,000 my ass, we're coming, 700,000 of us. All right, America, roll up your sleeves. Get in there and get your anthrax shot, your flu shot. God damn it, we're going back to the glory of America. All right, let's go. Everybody, let's go. What? Nobody's going? What's plan C? I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Friday night. I'm Mike Malloy.